This call is now being recorded. You may begin.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. This is the IGO-INGO Access to Curative Rights Protection PDP Working Group call on the 5th of November, 2014. On the call today, we have Val Sherman, Petter Reinforth, Mason Cole, George Kirokos, Detmer Linden, Gary Campbell, Paul Tattersfield, Jim Bykoff, Alexander Lerman, Osvaldo Nuovo, Lori Schulman, David Heasley, and Philip Corwin. We have apologies from Jay Chapman. From staff, we have Mary Wong, Amy Bivens, Barry Cobb, Steve Chan, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would like to remind all participants to please state their name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Petter.
Thank you. Petter Reinforth here. So next point, any updates of statement of interest? I see no hands up for that. But then we pass on directly to main topic of today, point two, the discussion of questions to be sent to the GNSL Council GEC, GNSL Liaison, for follow-up on the GEC's Los Angeles communique. As you may know, the background is a GEC communique issued on October 16 in Los Angeles with direct relations to the tasks of this working group, and where parts of the communique states that concerning curative protection at the second level and noting the ongoing GNS or PDP on access to curative rights protection mechanism, the GEC reminds the ICANN board that any such mechanism should be at no or nominal cost to IGOs and that the UDRP should not be amended. And as you remember, we have originally been directed to consider, among other topics, the interplay between the topic under consideration in this PDP and the forthcoming GNSO review of the specifically the UDRP, the URS, and other rights protection mechanisms, and examine whether or not similar justifications and amendments should apply to both the UDRP and the URS, or if each procedure should be treated independently and or differently, and also to seek input as to how the UDRP and or URS might be amended to accommodate considerations, in particular to IGOs, and also to consider whether or not there may be practical alternatives other than amending the current systems that can nonetheless provide adequate creative rights protections for IGOs and INGOs, such as the development of a specific narrowly tailored dispute resolution procedure model after the UDRP and URS and applicable only to IGOs and or INGOs. And, well, I hope you all have seen the draft. We have it on the screen. I'm not sure if we at this stage have to go through everything, but what I want to say that although it will be signed by both of us, it is in fact Phil that have done the great job on this, so thanks. And what you can see, we do not propose any changes, only to get further input and clarification in order to proceed efficiently. And so the proposed questions to GEC via the Council are to seek the assistance of the Council in directing Mason Cole to engage in a dialogue with the GEC regarding this matter and to seek to have interested GEC representatives and our IGOs to engage cooperatively in this policy process. It's very important to have their input and direct replies to our questions. And also that we hope that some questions could be directed to the GEC as we see clarifications that will assist the working group in this task, and that two specific questions on the matter of no or nominal cost to IGOs. Does the GEC consider the current fees charged by URS and UDRP providers to be nominal? If the GEC considers those charges to be in excess of nominal, and what source of funding or other support mechanism would be the GAC suggest to fully pay or subsidize the fees charged by dispute resolution providers. And this, the GAC has raised the cost question, and it's also, I think, important for us to know what kind of system they are looking for if we should try to make amendments or to create something new. And the other question is in regard to the issue of potential amendment of the UDRP. Why has the GAC gone on record as opposing any UDRP amendments as a means of providing IGOs with access to curative rights? If it is the GAC's position that an entirely new curative rights mechanism must be created, then what universally recognized legal rights of IGOs should be its basis, apart from the traditional registered, well-known trademark issue. So I believe that the next GNSO Council meeting is still on Thursday next week, so I'm not sure that we will have the time to get this on their table, but on the other hand, if we can make a decision today, we have good possibility to at least open up for an initial discussion at the Council. So I have open up for the floor for comments, and I see Mason there, but just wanted to put it on to Phil Sestan. Do you want to add anything?
Yeah, thanks, Peter. That was a good review. As you noted, I was the main draftsman on the letter. What we're dealing with here is a situation where the GAC has communicated to the board and not to us or the council, but they're certainly referencing our working group, and to the extent that their communique can be viewed as trying to narrow the scope of our inquiry or direct us to a particular conclusion, I think Petter and I are both committed to comprehensively and very objectively carrying out the directive we've been given by the GNSO Council in the resolution. So there's a need here to, I think, have Mason engage, and it'd be a challenge for him and his first big issue is this in this liaison position between the council and the GAC to raise some questions about hey GAC, what do you mean by nominal? Why do you feel that the UDRP shouldn't be amended? Does that mean that you think the UDRP is just fine the way it is, or that we need an entirely new DRP? And if that's your position, what's the right spaces for that? So we're trying to diplomatically raise some questions and hopefully getting the GAC and IGOs to engage more constructively and directly with this working group rather than trying to communicate end goals through communications to the board, which, again, is not going to limit the work of this group. So I'll stop there, and I see Mason wants to talk, and then hope others will weigh in if you think we need to change this text in any way or add to it or delete something. Let's hear it now, because given a council meeting next week, if we can get this letter approved today, we can get it off to the council and hopefully get this on their discussion agenda next week. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thanks. Mason, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Peter. Mason Cole speaking. I think, first of all, thank you, Phil, for the work on the letter. It's very clear. I think on question number two regarding amendment of the UDRP, if I could suggest a text change that might be more helpful to get information from the GAC, I would change the first part of the question from why has the GAC on record to what is the GAC's rationale for opposing any UDRP? For opposing any UDRP amendments as a means of providing IGOs with access to curative rights. I think if we ask why the GAC's gone on record, I have two thoughts on that. One is the GAC is extremely sensitive, and they would probably take that question as unnecessarily aggressive, even though I agree with the tone personally. And second, I think it could elucidate an answer of just because we feel that way. I think if we ask them what their rationale is, that's a better way to get them to articulate their feelings. Then the question becomes, what do we do with that information? And when I say we, I mean the GNSO. So if they come back with a rationale of whatever kind, then we need to have in mind how the council would, or this working group would reply, if it is going to reply at all to the GAC, or how it's going to address that issue in its work.
Thanks, Mason. I like your very diplomatic amendment. We really need GAC to read this document, so it's good to have. Mary?
Thanks, Peter. And I had some similar thoughts to Mason, so I won't repeat what he said, and perhaps we can just add something to that particular part of the letter. And I note that George in the chat and several people agree with him that maybe we need a little bit more color, but the tone, I agree with Mason, is great, and thank you, Phil, for doing the draft. My other point was that in relation to asking the GAC about the universally recognized legal rights of IGOs, and this does go back to something Mason said, they might well just come back also and say, well, you know, haven't you paid attention to the fact that the IGOs keep pointing to Article 6 ter of the Paris Convention? So I wonder if our purpose there is to talk about the standing issue, right, for any sort of dispute resolution procedure, that in replacement for having a trademark, that IGOs are protected by, in the GAC's words, international law and multiple national laws. If we wanted to finesse that part a little more so that we could try to elicit perhaps a more specific type of response from the GAC other than look at what our communique said.
Yeah, this is Phil. I'm going to jump in. And first, in regard to Mason, what I was trying to get at, perhaps inartfully, was to ask them for their rationale. So I'm fine with that change. And Mary, if you want to propose some language on the second part of that question, that would maybe flesh it out a little bit better. I'm fine with that as well. We don't want to antagonize them, but what we do want to say, you know, we want to let them know diplomatically that we have our charge from the council, and we're going to pursue it in a very objective way without any prejudging any of the issues. And but we're happy to have their input on these matters.
Thanks, Will. Peter here. And I said, if Mary and Mason, if you could send out email your proposed changes so that we can amend the document and then send out the amended draft to the full list. And maybe we can, if we can have a kind of formal acceptance here today at this meeting with the proposed amendments. If we send it out to you all before we send it to the council, I think we still have time to get it out this week and before the council meeting. Any other? Yes, George?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, hi. George Corrigan speaking. I'm just curious, from an administrative point of view, has the GAC actually appointed somebody in leadership to liaise with us because there was some talk that Heather Dryden had stepped down and that her replacement was not going to be taking a position as the head of the GAC until sometime mid-next year. And so there was kind of like a leadership vacuum for the next few months. I was curious whether we actually have somebody that is formally going to answer the letter that we send.
Yeah, I think there is a new leader, isn't it, Mary?
Thanks for the question, George. I don't think we as staff have any further information than the group has, but the new chair is Thomas Schneider. So typically, any correspondence from one SOAC to another would go through the chair. So in our case, Jonathan Robinson would send the letter to Thomas, who would then direct it to whoever or whichever subcommittee of the GAC is working on that issue. So hopefully the sort of transition that's happening in the GAC leadership now really won't affect where our letter goes or whether it goes to the right person. I hope this helps.
Thanks. Peter here again. And GAC also have a group that works with these kind of issues that is led by Peter Netterfold from Australia. And I don't think there have been any changes there. So once our question reach GAC, there will be people that knows about the topic and are active in the issue. George? George, your hand is up. Okay, Mason?
I was just going to elaborate on that. I agree with you that Peter Netterfold is in a position to help out the council on this matter. I'm also, just for this working group's understanding, I'm searching for someone inside the GAC with whom I can interact on a day-to-day basis to talk about GNSO-related issues. So I'm hoping for that so that we don't waste time is not the right term for it, but we don't lose time trying to communicate to the entire GAC. We can find a representative inside the GAC with whom I can communicate and then elicit GAC response. The second point I wanted to make is I think that going forward, working groups and the council should try to construct communications with the GAC in a way that tries to get a specific outcome from the GAC. The more specific we can be, and this letter is very specific, which I appreciate, the more specific we can be, the more likely we are to actually get useful information out of the GAC. Part of the problem that we have with the GAC as a council and as working groups is their advice is sometimes very vague, and it leaves it up to us to try to interpret it. So the more particular we can be in our language, I think the better off we're going to be, and that's just a general observation that I have in my limited time so far as liaison.
Mason, it's a question to you. If we raise this this issue to GAC and we get the traditional formal reply, can we perhaps by Netterfold have possibilities to get more clarification, even if it's not on how to read that very formal reply?
And I'm not sure that this is really in direct response to you, but following up on George's question and comment, like I said, I think the letter will go to Thomas Schneider just because of the chair-to-chair communication. But in terms of that plus Mason's comment, as I noted to the chairs on the pre-call this morning, we have an IGO member of the working group as an observer, that's WIPO, and since they do track the mailing list as an observer, and since they are one of the IGOs who have been involved in this issue as well as on the earlier working group, I feel fairly confident that for our group at least and for this request that it will go to the folks who are working on it on the GAC side, and I would assume that that includes the IGOs who are observers to the GAC as well. So again, hopefully this helps.
Thanks, Mary. Mason?
Just another thought, one observation about how the GAC may reply. We should be prepared that the GAC doesn't reply at all. We should consider that they may reply and say, just refer to our communique, that's how we feel about it. Or they might come back with something very specific. They may also come back and say, we have individual government feedback, but we don't have any additional information as an entire GAC representation. So, I know the working group is in a position to try to take clarification wherever it can, but until we sort out who's going to speak for the GAC and at what level, then we should be prepared for almost any reply, including none at all. And that's just another observation. I do hope we get a fulsome reply from them. I think that would be the most helpful, obviously, but I'm not sure what we're going to get at this point. This is sort of the first test case for me as a liaison.
Okay, yeah. Well, we'll keep our thumbs. Again, to summarize, it seems that there's no objection in general to this document. We have got some good proposed for amendments, attachments from Mason and Mary. So if you can write them down, and then we'll make the amendments and send out the document again quickly to you all before we pass it on to the council and Paul. Please go ahead. Paul, sorry, I can't hear you.
And this is Terry from staff. I see Paul's line is unmuted at this time. Paul, if you can please check your mute button.
Okay, yeah. On the last item on the letter, I suggest that you also reference to the possibility of amending the mutual jurisdiction language to allow IGOs to limit immunity waiver issue. That was what you wanted to say.
Yes.
Good. Thanks for that. And I'll pass on to Phil.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. I'm already marking up the right after this call is over, I'll circulate a new draft of that. Paul, if you have specific language you'd like included in the letter, if you could shoot that to me right away, I'll work it in. Do we think that the GAC, I just don't want to start raising issues they didn't raise, but of course, we're kind of guessing at their reasons for saying don't amend the UDRP, and the sovereign immunity jurisdiction issue could well be one of them. So I think that's certainly within scope of putting in this letter to the council. And
okay.
And Paul, yeah, I see your I see your language in the chat, but he has specific. If you have a specific way you want to pose that, you can just shoot it to me in an email, and we'll work it into this draft that I'll circulate shortly after this call ends. And if we can get sign off by the working group members today, we can get that letter out this week, and hopefully get this matter on the council's agenda for when they meet next week. And that's all I had.
Thanks, Phil. Mary?
Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Peter. And so since we have Paul on the call, even though I guess he's having some voice problems with being heard, at least, Paul, I know you can hear us. I was wondering, Phil and Paul, if in respect of Paul's suggestion, instead of making it as a question, I guess we could simply seek the GAC's advice on how we could go about dealing with the jurisdiction issue. Phil, I'm sure you can craft it more elegantly than that, but I thought that it might be helpful to at least subtly in the language make a distinction between asking them questions that stem directly from what they said in the communique and then taking the opportunity to ask for any further advice they might have or input they might have on an issue that we know we have to consider.
Thanks, Mary. Paul, am I on the line now? The last thing I see from you is okay. If that's Hello, George.
Hi, George Rico speaking. Yeah, I just wanted to point out that if we ask them, though, for what their advice is on handling the jurisdiction issue, they might come up with just another conclusion or directive that ignores our own research, so they might prejudice the entire work of the working group.
Yeah, NGO.
Okay, old shell.
P-A-U-L, Keating, K-E-A-T-I-N-G.
Paul, you're still online. Do you want to say something?
Yes, thanks.
Hello?
Hello?
This is Paul Keating.
Okay, yes.
Sorry about that.
Yes, Paul.
I didn't know if there was a question directed my way.
Set up. And I think, George, your hands are still up, but you said what you wanted to say. So, Phil.
Yeah, just respond. I think George raised a good point. I think we want to, again, this working group's going to operate under the resolution we got from the council in an objective and comprehensive way, not limited by anything from the GAC or others. I think we want to differentiate between this letter's intent to ask for GAC clarification of statements they made in the communique. I don't think we want to be in the position of asking for open-ended GAC advice. The GAC is free to send any advice it wants to the board, but they have a different relationship with the board than they're going to have with us. We're part of the community. We're working on behalf of the GNSO Council with members volunteering from the community, and we want hopefully to use this working group to establish a better means for the GAC and also for IGOs to interact with work of the council and its subsidiary groups, but I don't think that includes asking for advice from the GAC, as opposed to clarification from the GAC regarding statements they've already made that are relevant to our work. I don't want to parse this too finely, but I don't want to create a precedent where the GAC feels free to give advice to GNSO working groups on any matter. as opposed to participating in some way with the work of those groups. And that's all I had to say on that subject.
Yeah, that's a good point. Okay. Paul?
Better?
Better.
I don't know if anyone can hear me. I think so.
My suggestion about interfering on the last section was an explanation for a reason why we might want to amend the UDRP in a very limited context, just to deal with the waiver of immunity issue. You know, this is clarifying that selecting a mutual jurisdiction by an ITO or anyone else is not necessarily waiving objections to jurisdiction or waiving their immunity rights.
Yeah, sorry, Paul. There was a lot of echo on that. Maybe easier if
I
you...
I seem to be having very bad luck here.
Yeah.
I'll write it out. Chat. I'll type it out.
Okay. Well, to conclude, I think we have got some good inputs, so just to be able to proceed in this matter, again, we'll make the amendments and send out a new draft that we can make a formal acceptance of before we send it out on time. Hopefully to have the council to get on the table next week. And thereby, I suggest that we move on to the next item on the agenda, which is a discussion on possible distinctions between IGOs and INGOs and the Red Cross and IOC compared to other INGOs. I don't know if we have any specific pictures on that. Mary, you have... anything to start with on this?
Hi, Peter. Hi, everyone. This is Mary again. What I put on the screen is the email that Paul Keating sent to the working group of some hours ago, and we're doing that on the basis that maybe some working group members may not have had a chance to review everything that he noted in his email. I would note that he is basically carrying forward a discussion that's already started on the mailing list, and I know a few comments were made in prior calls as well. So these three issues that he's listed in his email at the beginning would seem to be the three issues that we have started talking about. So, Peter, I don't know how you want to kick off the discussion or if anybody else is in the queue to speak, or perhaps Phil, I know that you had started that discussion as well, so perhaps that's a good place to start, to agree that these are the three issues and maybe take them in turn. But I would note that, of course, on questions one and two, as you see from Paul's note on the screen, those are the things that we've just been talking about in respect of getting some further GAC input on it. But that should not delay our discussion or perhaps conclusion or preliminary conclusion on this matter pending any further input.
Thanks, yes. And I also noted that we have also discussed costs what we'll send out to the GAC. So anyone that wants to start the discussion? Yes, Phil?
Yeah, well, shortly before the call started, I had circulated a quick response to Paul, I think his concerns, you know, are very valid, but I don't think this group has expressed any consensus desire to treat organizations differently or to limit our work. As I said, I think Petter and I are both committed to carrying out the guidance for this working group under the GNSO Council resolution in a very objective and comprehensive manner and not prejudge anything. But on standing, my take on these issues, and it's purely personal, it doesn't bind the working group, on standing, we're trying to determine whether IGOs, and we're going to get back in a minute to whether we're going to delete INGOs other than Red Cross and IOC from their further consideration. I think we're probably at that point. Let's get back to that in a couple of minutes. Is there any reason that IGOs can't use the existing curative rights process? Is there some barrier to them getting trademarks, which is a precondition to using those processes? And is there any validity to their sovereign immunity concerns, which is number two? And we haven't made any decision on that yet. We're looking into it. On the cost issue, on nominal cost, I'm not sure what the GAC means by nominal. I would view both UDRP and URS as nominal means for protecting one's rights. They're certainly much less expensive than litigating under trademark law in the U.S., and I would guess that's probably the same situation in Europe and Canada and Australia and probably even in other jurisdictions, developing world jurisdictions. I'd be surprised if even in a place like India or China, you could access the legal system if there's applicable law for less than those processes. On the issue of free access, our group's been directed to consider costs, but we have no mandate, nor do we have any means of creating a subsidy mechanism to provide free access to dispute resolution providers. I think we have to work on the assumption that whether it's the existing UDRP URS or some version that's been modestly amended to accommodate IGOs or even a brand new curative rights process, which we'd only do that if we think it's absolutely necessary and if there's a rights basis it can be grounded in. Somebody's got to make the decision, some expert arbitrators, and they're not going to work for free. They're not going to do pro bono work, so if IGOs want free access, someone's got to pay for that. This group has no ability to create such a funding mechanism. So I'll stop there, but again, I want to assure Paul and everyone else that we're going to proceed in a very comprehensive and objective way and only make decisions where we have good consensus within the working group. Did others want to comment on Paul's letter before we get back to item three on the agenda, which is IGOs and INGOs and Red Cross and IOC?
Mary?
Thanks, Petter, and thank you, Phil. I'm not putting comments to Paul's letter, not being a formal working group member, but I thought it might be helpful for our working group to also bear in mind the ICANN board's proposal that was last sent to the GAC in March earlier this year through the new GTLD program committee, or the NGPC. And that is the proposal that the GAC is expected to come back on, and I believe there's been some discussion between the NGPC and the GAC on that proposal, but I could be wrong, but I haven't seen any formal response from the GAC. And the reason I bring it up is because in that March proposal from the NGPC, they do talk about the URS as well as an arbitration mechanism. And on the URS, the NGPC suggests that IGOs will not be required to pay to use the URS, so that's one proposal on the cost issue, specifically on the URS. Another proposal on the URS is to do away with the consent to national jurisdiction, and I know this has been an issue for some members of this group. In relation to the arbitration mechanism, and they don't, you know, use the words UDRP, I guess because they are foreseeing that it could either be an amended UDRP or a new process. They're talking about an arbitration process that would resolve the claims potentially on appeal from whatever dispute resolution proceeding it ultimately becomes. So I don't think that these proposals, since they're merely proposals under discussion, should direct or determine the direction of our group, but I thought it might be helpful background information in addition to what Phil, Paul, and others have provided.
Thanks, Mary. Katie?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Great, thank you. Mary, now I'm totally confused. So Shireen Shalaby's group, the NGCP of the board, is already talking with the GAC about specific proposals for IGOs and the URS and costs. If that's the case, I don't understand what we're doing here.
Petter, can I follow up on Kathy's comment? Actually, Kathy, that's right in that if I take a step back and go back to the background for our working group, and what I've just done is put the proposal on the screen here, is that all this happened before our working group was constituted, and this came up because of two things. One, the inconsistencies between the GAC advice and the GNSO's recommendations from our prior working group. And so that's all the TMCH stuff, for example, that you see on the top of this page. And this is part of the dialogue between the GNSO, the GAC, and the board. And secondly, because the GAC advice, dating back to, I believe it might be Buenos Aires, or even before that, again, that was all last year, had talked about URS arbitration and UDRP, the whole idea of a nominal cost proceeding. So when the board first received the GNSO's recommendations in February, earlier this year, it directed the NGPC to develop a proposal that would take into account the GNSO's recommendations as well as the GAC's advice. And so this is the proposal, and this was sent to the GAC in March, and it was also sent to the GNSO in March. So this was on the mind of the council in developing the charter for our working group and in asking us to simply just look at the curative rights question. So this was kind of a long-winded explanation, but hopefully it's helpful to those folks who haven't been involved in earlier phases of this. I don't think that this affects what we have to do. I think, as Phil pointed out earlier, our tasks are very clearly set forth in the charter, but that I was simply trying to provide this as background information that's being discussed. So, like I said, there's been no formal response from the GAC, for I know this is not something that anyone is, you know, interested in talking about, but like I said, this was just background information, and I think our group should proceed on the basis of what we, on a consensus basis, believe to be the right thing to do.
Thanks, Mary. Katie?
Yeah, thanks for the follow-up. So, Mary, does the board know that we're working on this? Is the board, and do we know whether the board, and particularly the NGCP, the new GTLD committee, which actually acts as the board because so many board members are conflicted out of new GTLD issues, do we know, are they waiting for us, or could they be going forward on this? Is there a halt to the board's work, or could we wind up with completely conflicting policies?
Kathy, I would be happy to respond, and basically I'm happy to say that the board is very aware of the work by our group. In fact, what they did was they asked the GNSO Council before LA to send them an update on what our group was doing, and the council did send a briefing note to the board. I believe that may have been in August or September. And similarly, the GAC advice and the LA communique did note the ongoing work of our PDP working group. So I'm confident in saying that both the board and the GAC are aware of our work and are tracking our work. So like I said, a lot of this other information is background for our group, just to know what else might be going on, just to know, you know, what might be happening. But most of what is happening outside our working group at the moment, as between the board, the GNSO Council, and the GAC, really concerns the trademark clearinghouse issues, because they're really focused on resolving the differences between the GAC advice and the GNSO recommendations on that. So I would say that for the time being, you know, they're aware of our work, they are interested in our work, but they are not proceeding in parallel in any way.
Thank you. Because once we talk about URS, it seems like they might be. But okay, thanks.
Now, Petterine for there. Just wanted to add that when the council had a meeting with the board in LA, they confirmed that they know about what we're working with and appreciated our work. And they also stated that it was important to get a quick reply on specific issues directly from the GAC. Phil?
Yeah, Tupa, just to reference the resolution that we're operating under that is the basis for this working group, the next to last paragraph says that we should invite participation from other ICANN supporting organizations and advisory committees, including the GAC, and from interested IGOs and INGOs, which we're doing, of course, and this letter we're sending is actually part of that in a proactive way. And then it says we should track any ongoing discussion between the GAC and GNSO on resolving remaining differences between GAC advice and the GNSO recommendations on Red Cross, Red Crescent, and IGO acronym protection, which is what Mary was just talking about. But what we're working on goes beyond new TLDs and goes beyond trademark clearinghouse and acronym protections. It's about whether the UDRP URS works for IGOs and INGOs, and if not, what if anything can be done to provide them with some protective process. In regard to in the chat, Paul, I think was saying, you know, why was I differentiating between International Olympic Committee and Red Cross and all the other INGOs, and that is because they're specifically referenced in the resolution that created this working group, which, as I read it, gives us an option on whether we want to do anything for INGOs generally, but also mandates that we look at the relevance of specific legal protections for IGOs and certain INGOs, and then it says, namely, the Red Cross and IOC. So the very resolution that created this working group directs us to at least keep Red Cross and IOC, you know, a focus on them, even if we decide not to do anything for other INGOs. That's the extent of my comment on that.
Thanks, Paul.
Hopefully I've got a better connection now. Is that better for everyone?
Much better.
Okay. This is what you get for paying for it. I'm calling through the U.S. instead of through Spain. But okay, so my concern is, Mary, could you put up that the other document you had put up before you re-put up mine? My email, and I have a real concern here. My concern mainly is to be consistent throughout the whole process, because my experience is, particularly if we expect unknown third-party groups to enforce what we're going to come up with, we need to really have consistency, and we have to have consistent touchstones to the precedent rules, the rules that have pre-existed us. You can't just go around creating new rules for unique entities. So for me, I would very much like to approach, and I don't have anything against the Red Cross or the Olympic Committee. I think they should fit in the same standing criteria. So they have a trademark. They're protected under national laws of most countries. So I don't see why they don't already have standing. That drives it down to the other two issues, which are cost and immunity. And I think we've dealt with the cost issue. I think I don't have any great ideas for financing them other than the ones that Phil came up with. And then we are left with immunity. So I'm very much concerned about separating things out from and dealing with these entities differently. We need to have a rigid set of rules that are going to apply. Otherwise, we're going to create a disaster. And I was very concerned when Mary put up that piece of paper that showed changes to the URS, the TMCH. Now, I don't mind about changes to the TMCH. It's just an advisory notification. But the next section said that ICANN will amend the URS to provide to allow IGOs to participate. So there we are now. We're playing with the standing issue. So we need to deal with those things, and I think we need to deal with it for all entities in a consistent fashion, and not just IGOs versus INGOs, the Red Cross versus my mother's favorite trust. Okay, that's all my comment. Thank you.
It's Jim Bykoff. Can I respond on that?
Step in.
I just want to say I think we're creating more work here than needs to be done. I represent the IOC, as everybody knows. I have represented the Red Cross in the past. They both have registered trademarks. They both participated in UDRPs, many of them, each one. And they, and we have no cost concerns. I think it's silly to make this more of an exercise than we need to. I think the real problem here is the IGOs, and I think Paul's point about expanding remedies where we don't have reason to, and expanding our charter, even though some of these issues have been included in the charter. Is going to take up a lot of valuable time that we all could be devoting to the real issue here, and that is whether IGOs have access or not, and if they don't, what do we do about it? And I think the questions posed to the GAC should be answered, and I'm not sure we should spend a lot of time on things that we know are already true, such as access to the UDRP and the URS by the IOC and the Red Cross. As far as IGOs go, I think that's still an open issue. And I think that's where our efforts should be.
Good point. Paul? I don't mean to beat a dead horse, so please feel free to cut me off if you think I am better. For me, I don't have any problem with IGOs or INGOs participating in curative remedies, but they need to sustain the basic standing requirements, which is either a registered trademark or a common law trademark. I mean, the first element of the UDRP and the URS is a hurdle that's so small. I think I wrote in my email that a worm could cross it. So I don't understand why we have this big need to go overboard to protect them. The rules are in place. We have, 15 years worth of experience of whittling down the first element of the UDRP, so it's almost nothing. I don't understand why they can't go about protecting their rights the way everybody else in the world protects them. Get a registered trademark or produce the evidence to show that you have a common law trademark to get into the game, to cross that standing threshold. That's all I have to say.
Thanks, Paul. Petter here. I think we all more or less agree with that, and that's also why we may conclude that we should proceed with the work related to IGOs and conclude that INGOs can have enough protection in the system that already exists. Phil?
Yeah, just to comment on what Paul said. You know, we may wind up in that place where we'd say that we may determine, I don't think we've done all the work necessary to reach a conclusion yet, that IGOs can obtain trademarks, that on the immunity issue, maybe we decide that it's not a valid concern, or decide that we can make a simple jurisdictional change for those IGOs that allows them to use the existing processes. I think the last thing any of us want to do, unless we have to do it, is create an entirely new dispute resolution process. We'd have to decide who's going to be the providers, what's going to be the basis for standing, what are going to be the categories that limit the rights, similar to goods and categories of goods and services. I mean, create something like that's going to be a nightmare. So we may wind up in that place, but we haven't done all the work yet. I do, and maybe we're at 1 minute before the end of the hour yet. Maybe we can't make the decision today, but I think we came close on the last call and then are in the kind of the same place this call in deciding that there's no reason to consider INGOs further other than perhaps Red Cross and International Olympic Committee. And even there, I'm not sure we need to, other than that it's in the resolution, simply because they have no difficulty getting trademarks and no sovereign immunity issue, and there's no barrier to them using the existing process other than cost, maybe for some of them, but we're not a group that can create a subsidy mechanism for them. I think it's probably too late to make a final decision on that today, but I think first order of business next week should be whether to go down the road I think everyone's saying, which is let's take INGOs off the table and focus the remainder of our work on IGOs and see where we are, do some more targeted research on that.
Thanks, Phil. Very short note from Paul. We have to end the meeting now. Paul?
I'm sorry. I don't see the I see a distinction in treatment between INGOs and IGOs as a distinction without a difference. If we're going to create a logical framework for dealing with them, I see no difference between how we treat one versus the other. And I don't see how it's going to incorporate more work to deal with it within the same framework. I just don't understand that, Phil. So if you're saying you're hearing from me consensus building to separate them, I'm sorry, but you're not. I'm exactly the opposite. I'm saying treat them all the same, create a logical framework for dealing with it, and then let's move on processing through the framework and creating our document that sustains our work.
Okay, thanks. Kerry, last speaker, 1 minute. Go on.
Okay, I know we're going on. Who was that just speaking, by the way?
That was Paul Keating speaking last.
Oh, okay, that was Paul. I just wanted to say I agree with what Phil said, and I thought it was a consensus until Paul spoke up. Thanks.
This is Jim Bykoff. I agree also with what Kathy and Paul have said.
Good. So I see from the notes that on the letter to the council and GEC, Phil will edit the letter, and the final version will be sent to the council by the end of this week, hopefully. And I also just wanted to note to you that we'll have the face-to-face facilitated working group session at the ICANN 52. That will not be in Marrakesh, but in Singapore. But the dates remain unchanged. So, before we go, should the subgroups continue meeting before the next call? I think it's if you still have some, and I know that our groups have some remaining follow-up questions that it's good to finalize and just to have a first report for our next meeting that you can send out on the email list. So, stating that, thanks all for today, and getting up next week.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.